This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Futuro.
We're in the maternity waiting room at Hospital Universitario Erasmo Meos, the main public hospital in Cúcuta, Colombia's biggest border city with Venezuela. It's before the pandemic, and there are some 15 pregnant women sitting in the green tile hallway. It's hot, and the fans are buzzing. The women sit quietly in tank tops and flip-flops. They rub their prominent bellies. One young woman stands out. She's wearing a pink wool beanie. Squeezed between two older, bulky women, she looks fragile in her blue hospital gown. She holds an IV bag in her left hand. Her name is Exibel Enriquez.
Yo vine sola, sola con Dios. Tengo un mes que llegué aquí y me vine por la situación de mi bebé. No lo podía tener allá porque no hay recursos, no hay nada.
Exibel traveled alone, more than 700 miles from Anzoátegui, her hometown in northeastern Venezuela. She was afraid of giving birth in her home country because Venezuelan hospitals have no resources and she couldn't afford a private clinic. And clearly, she wasn't the only one. More than half of the women in the waiting room are Venezuelan too.
Sí.
My conversation with Exibel ends abruptly. She's having really painful contractions and a nurse takes her away into the delivery room. At 20 years old, she's about to give birth to her second child. None of her pregnancies were planned.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, birth control, or the lack of it, in times of economic crisis. The prolonged economic crisis in Venezuela has made scarcity commonplace. The most basic goods, like toilet paper, toothpaste, or soap, can be impossible to find, and in any case, they're often very expensive. The same happens with birth control methods. Condoms or pills are almost non-existent. Venezuelans often have to resort to the black market to find them, but most people need to prioritize food or medicine. The lack of contraceptives may not sound like an urgent need for some people, but it's crucial for many women. In Venezuela, contraceptive shortages have driven pregnancies up, especially among teenagers, and thousands of women are leaving the country to safely give birth or, in some cases, to safely have an abortion. For women, losing access to contraceptives and getting pregnant without planning can have long-term consequences on their education, professional development, and economic and psychological well-being. Now, if you're wondering why we're talking about Venezuela, you have to understand that access to birth control and other reproductive services for women in Latin America and around the world have been impacted by decisions taken in the U.S., specifically with something known as the Mexico City policy. That's the Trump administration cutting support for nonprofit organizations that provide abortion services abroad. This story will also resonate with many women in the United States because in this country, birth control options have been reduced in recent years, both at the federal and state levels, from limiting access to free contraceptives for low-income women to states outright banning abortions. Our editor, Marta Martinez, who we heard from in the beginning of this piece, traveled to Cúcuta on the Colombian border with Venezuela. And she's going to bring us this story that shows how something seemingly small and often overlooked, like the lack of contraceptives, can actually have big and long-lasting consequences for women. Marta is going to take it from here.
I spent hours in the maternity waiting room at Erasmo Meos Hospital. It surprised me how quiet the women were. Their faces would contort when a contraction kicked in, but no one screamed like they do in the movies. At first, I thought it would be easy to talk to Venezuelan pregnant women and learn about their experience crossing the border into Colombia. But when you're 9 months pregnant, enduring contractions, and away from home, speaking to a journalist is not a priority. Many were afraid of talking to me, and they didn't want to give their real names. Some of them were teenagers. The soon-to-be mothers were here to make sure that their babies and themselves were safe. Most of the women I talked to had not been able to visit a doctor in Venezuela during their pregnancy. And for some of them, it was the first time they could listen to their baby's heartbeat. I toured the maternity ward with the coordinator of obstetrics and gynecology at the hospital, Dr. Julia Mejia.
¿Le van a hospitalizar el niño que tiene el niño?
Por una infección de sífilis que me salió retiro.
Dr. Mejia talked to a young Venezuelan mother whose newborn needed intensive care because the baby was born with syphilis. The lack of condoms in Venezuela has increased the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, and Dr. Mejia says that many of the Venezuelan mothers who arrive in Colombia have STDs, which in some cases are inherited by their babies.
Las pacientes vienen demasiado deshidratadas, caminan mucho tiempo para llegar acá, embarazadas, no se han hecho controles prenatales previos, no han tomado ningún tipo de medicamentos. Entonces vienen ya muy complejas acá y eso hace que se dificulte más.
Dr. Mejia explained that because the mothers are seriously malnourished and dehydrated, the babies are often born prematurely and need intensive care. Sometimes there's not much they can do, and many of them die before being born, or don't survive long after.
Y pues hemos detectado muchos óbitos, o sea, que las mamás vienen, pero ya vienen con el bebé muerto. Entonces, pues toca hacer el procedimiento para que expulse el feto.
Dr. Mejia said that the number of pregnant women arriving from Venezuela started growing in 2016. That year, of over 4,000 babies born at the hospital, some 200 were from Venezuelan mothers. 4 years later, that number went up to close to 5,000, representing 75% of all babies born at the hospital. The hospital staff is overwhelmed and exhausted, Dr. Mejia said. But they work with love because the patients really need their help. And this place is their only option. The next day, I went back to the hospital to check on Exibel, the Venezuelan with the pink beanie who was about to give birth to her second child, all by herself. She was lying on the bed, and under her arm was a tiny baby wrapped in a pink towel.
Cuéntame, ¿cómo te fue?
Bien, gracias a Dios, todo me salió bien.
Exibel was tired. Doctors had to perform a C-section, and the pain kept her up all night. She was expecting a boy, but she ended up having a girl. So she had to improvise a name, Luz Mariel.
Me sorprendió demasiado, porque tenía entendido que iba a ser niño. Incluso yo tenía su ropa de niño. Menos mal que traje también una de repuesto de niña, como que la intuición también, ¿no?
Her first daughter, Victoria, was back in Venezuela with Exibel's mother. When she got pregnant the first time, Exibel had just started college. Witness to injustice and corruption in her country, she always wanted to become a lawyer.
¿Qué es que se ven tantas injusticias en el mundo, tantas malas leyes, malos presidentes, malas cosas?
But paying for college while covering all the expenses for her newborn became unbearable. She dropped out of school in her second semester. I asked Exibel if she would have liked to continue studying.
¿Te hubiera gustado seguir estudiando?
Sí, bastante, de haberme graduado. Pero bueno, será ahora le tocará a ella estudiar y ser lo que yo no pude hacer, ¿verdad?
She said she would have loved to graduate, but now she hoped her daughters would have the chance to study and to achieve what she couldn't achieve. When Exibel got pregnant with her first daughter in 2017, she was taking contraceptives. But as the Venezuelan economic crisis deepened, they disappeared from pharmacies.
Pero hubo un momento donde desapareció todo, pastilla, todo método de uno cuidarse.
In 2018, between 80 and 90% of pharmacies in five major cities did not have contraceptives in stock. This is according to a study led by AVESA, one of the country's main sexual and reproductive rights organizations. Magdimar León, executive coordinator of AVESA, says the situation is still critical. Contraceptive supply has now improved, but nearly 60% of pharmacies continue to report shortages.
El problema ahora es el costo, porque estamos en un país donde los precios de todos los productos están dolarizados y no es fácil que una mujer da las...
In Venezuela, the main currency is now the US dollar, which paired with hyperinflation makes it hard for women to access birth control. The consequences can be profound, especially for young and poor women. In Venezuela, abortion is legal only when the mother's life is at risk. So when a woman seeks to end her pregnancy, she risks both her well-being and her freedom. And when they do have their babies...
Y esto las recarga de labores de cuidado y afecta la posibilidad de que ellas puedan continuar con sus estudios, con una formación laboral, con una ocupación, con una formación profesional, con la participación en la vida pública, en fin.
Magdimar said that having an unplanned child overburdens women and reduces their possibilities of continuing their education, getting a job, and participating in public life. It's like they're being sentenced to a life of care and reproductive work. Unable to provide for her first daughter, in 2018, Exibel spent a few months in Brazil with relatives, helping them run a small restaurant they owned in Sao Paulo. But she missed Victoria too much, so she went back home. This time, she brought contraceptives with her. She didn't want to get accidentally pregnant again. But after a few months, Exibel ran out of the contraceptive she had brought from Brazil and got pregnant again, from a different partner. Soon after, the father of her second child left for Peru, looking for a job, and according to her, has offered no economic support for the baby since then. With a collapsed healthcare system in Venezuela, Exibel knew she would have to migrate again. When she was 8 months pregnant, she packed her bags and literally hit the road.
Duré tres días en carretera porque el costo del autobús era demasiado caro. Donde me agarraba la noche ahí, amanecía, después seguía hasta que llegué aquí. No fue fácil.
Exibel said she hitchhiked for 3 days without any money or clear path. She slept wherever she could until she made it to the border.
Hola, mami, buen día. ¿Cómo estamos?
Less than 24 hours after giving birth and having a C-section, doctors told Exibel that she would have to leave the hospital. They needed her bed for another mother. Seeing her in pain and alone, I offered to drive her home.
Coming up on Latino USA, we take Exibel to the border between Colombia and her home country of Venezuela to learn more about the drastic measures Venezuelan women are taking to avoid unplanned pregnancies. And we learn about the surprising and ugly connection this story has to the United States. Stay with us, no te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo, modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're back. And when we left off, Exibel Enriquez, a migrant from Venezuela, had to leave a Colombian hospital less than 24 hours after giving birth. It was her second unplanned pregnancy. Marta Martinez is here with the rest of the story.
When Exibel made it down to the hospital lobby, she was sitting in a wheelchair, holding her newborn in her arms. Pushing the wheelchair was a young man with dark hair and warm brown eyes. Exibel said it was her cousin Romney.
Ay, no, Dios mío. Ay, qué dolor.
On our way to the place where she was living, we stopped at a pharmacy because the hospital didn't give Exibel any painkillers. She was not only enduring the pain of her second C-section. Right after giving birth, she asked the doctors to ligate her tubes, even though she was only 20 years old. I asked her why she decided to undergo such a serious, practically irreversible procedure.
Ah, porque es mejor. Sabes que para tener más y más hijos no es bueno eso. Después uno cuando viene a ver tiene cuatro, cinco. Como uno los atiende y si los padres no se hacen responsables. Es mejor así.
Exibel told me that she wants to avoid having more children. If you end up having four or five, how will you take care of them? And if their dads don't do their part, it's better this way, she says. Doctors at Erasmo Mateos Hospital told me that an increasing number of Venezuelan women are asking for tubal ligations. ProFamilia, the main reproductive rights organization in Colombia, has also registered a spike in the number of ligations that they have performed on Venezuelan women in recent years. The procedure is not uncommon for these migrants. In fact, government data shows that tubal ligation is actually one of the most used birth control methods in Venezuela. While official numbers are scarce and often unreliable, data from 2010 show that tubal ligation was the most used contraceptive method among Venezuelan women, more than pills or even condoms. The Venezuelan government has a program that offers free tubal ligations, but these procedures have become less available in recent years due to the lack of resources. Women often get very little information about the impact and the consequences of the procedure.
En un contexto en el que no tienen cómo acceder a otro tipo de métodos anticonceptivos, optan por esta opción.
Magdimar says that there is a high demand for tubal ligations because women don't have other options. And it is also tied to a lack of sexual education, both for women and men. In Colombia, abortions are legal under limited circumstances. When the fetus is not viable, the pregnancy was a result of rape or incest, or when the woman's health is at risk. Luz Paola Morales of ProFamilia said that Venezuelan women usually argue their health is at risk or sexual abuse when getting an abortion in Colombia. And they have seen a significant increase in the number of Venezuelan women asking for an abortion.
De atendemos mujeres de varios países, pero el 90% de las mujeres son venezolanas.
Paola said that 90% of their foreign-born patients are Venezuelan, and most of them seek help with access to contraceptives so that they won't get pregnant again. ProFamilia is one of hundreds of nonprofit organizations across the world that saw their U.S. funding cut after the Trump administration revived the Mexico City policy from the Reagan era, also known as Global Gag Rule.
The president issued a memorandum reestablishing the Mexico City policy, stating that the United States will end the use of taxpayer dollars to fund abortions overseas, along with coercive abortion and sterilization practices.
The Reagan administration instituted the policy in 1984 following a Mexico City conference. It cuts off U.S. government aid for abortion services to groups that provide or even mention abortion as an option.
The funding cuts forced ProFamilia to reduce its services, resulting in the end of its sex education program for displaced boys and girls, both Venezuelan migrants and displaced Colombians, affecting some 60,000 young people. But reduced access to reproductive health services is not only a foreign issue.
My administration has proposed a new rule to prohibit Title X funding from going to any clinic that performs abortions.
The Trump administration barred healthcare providers who receive federal funds from performing or referring for abortions under a program known as Title X, implemented in the 1970s.
They did a lot of research in the 1960s and found women were having more babies than they wanted. And it was lower income women typically who just didn't have the access to contraception. So Title X gave women access to condoms, talked about IUDs, the pill.
Many healthcare providers like Planned Parenthood ended up abandoning the Title X program. As a consequence, the Guttmacher Institute estimates that the capacity to provide women with contraceptive and other reproductive health services fell by at least 46% in 2019. That is roughly 1.6 million patients, most of them low-income women. President Joe Biden has revoked the Global Gag Rule and taken steps to restore Title X. But some measures curtailing women's reproductive rights might take much longer to reverse.
The court here handing the Trump administration a significant win, allowing the Trump administration to really weaken that contraceptive mandate under the Affordable Care Act.
Women will no longer be able to get an abortion pill by mail. The Supreme Court put a requirement back in place that says women must visit a hospital or a clinic in order to get the drug.
At the Supreme Court, there is now a conservative majority. And some recent decisions point at women's access to contraceptives and abortion services to get more complicated. Last summer, the court allowed employers to abstain from covering birth control methods in their health insurance plans based on religious or moral grounds. And in January, the court required women to obtain the abortion pill in person, despite the social distancing measures in place during the pandemic. Since 2011, more than 450 provisions restricting access to abortion care have been enacted in the U.S. The long-term consequences for women who can't have an abortion when they seek one are well documented. A five-year study conducted by the University of California in San Francisco found that women who could not get an abortion and ended up having unplanned children were more likely to struggle financially. This is Sarah Miller, one of the researchers who worked on the Turnaway study.
And what we found is that women who were able to receive the abortion, they didn't experience any particularly big increase in financial problems. But the women who were denied the abortion did. They saw sort of right around the time they were denied the abortion, a big spike in things like bills that they couldn't pay on time, credit scores falling, and also more serious financial problems like evictions, bankruptcies, and wage garnishments and sort of serious financial issues that end up in the court system. And these were not short-term effects. These were effects that we saw over the entire six-year period. They didn't show much evidence of going away.
those long-term consequences were not only economic.
Women who were denied abortions had worse physical health. They had higher rates of chronic illness, things like high blood pressure and the like. They also had two maternal deaths that occurred in the turnaway group. So there were two women who died sort of as a direct result of the birth.
The study didn't examine race and ethnicity differences across participating women, but the researchers highlight that it's important to look at who seeks an abortion more often.
The majority of women who seek abortions are women of color. So only about a little bit under 40% of women who seek abortions are white, and the rest are women of color.
Exibel's baby was hungry, but she was not producing milk yet. It is common for women who undergo C-sections to take longer to produce breast milk. In the car, Exibel told me about the first days in Colombia. She said she had no money to buy food, so she sold her long, straight hair. That's why she was wearing the pink beanie that made her stand out when I first saw her at the hospital. She was ashamed of her short hair. She said she looked like a macho.
Por eso es que lo tengo así. Lo vendí todo cuando llegué. Pa mañapa me estafaron porque tampoco yo sabía nada de pesos, nada de esas cosas.
Me dieron 10,000 pesos y ya pensaba que eso era plata.
Exibel and her cousin Romney said the people who cut her hair ripped her off. They gave her 10,000 Colombian pesos, which sounded like a lot to Exibel, but it was less than $3. With the money she got from her hair, Exibel and two friends bought some cigarettes and they tried to sell them on the street. But there were many other Venezuelan migrants doing just the same, so they didn't make enough to pay for a place to sleep. They ended up sleeping on the street for the first few nights. As her due date got closer, it became too uncomfortable for Exibel to sleep on the floor, and she rented a room with a bed in San Antonio, on the Venezuelan side of the border.
Ay, pobrecita. Tiene hambre.
The baby finally calmed down. She was hungry. Exibel knows that there are many young Venezuelan women, just like her, who didn't plan to get pregnant so early. Who wants to get pregnant on that side of the border right now? She asked.
¿Qué mujer quiere estar saliendo embarazada de aquel lado? Si no hay absolutamente nada. Lo primero que piensan es cómo voy a hacer para los pañales, la leche, el alimento. Solo uno puede ir al fin del mundo. Pero con tus hijos, tú quieres estar con ellos, tienes que andar con ellos.
She said that when you're alone, you can go to the end of the world. But when you have children, you want to be with them. You have to be with them. Exibel's dream now is having a home for her to raise her two daughters and to be close to them.
¿Cuál sería tu sueño para ti y para tus hijas?
Ay, poder tener mi casa para yo estar con ella. Un trabajo donde pudiera mantenerla y cuidar. Y no tener que alejarme de ella. Yo me estoy perdiendo de muchos momentos de estar con mi hija por estar aquí. Ella va creciendo, aprendiendo, y yo no estoy allá.
Exibel said she was missing a lot of moments with her older daughter, who was back in Venezuela. Her daughter was growing up, and she was not there with her. We were approaching Simón Bolívar Bridge, the main crossing point between Colombia and Venezuela. On the sides of the road, there were young men anxiously scanning the cars passing by. They were looking for potential clients, people who needed help carrying bags or merchandise across the border. There were so many of them, and competition was so fierce that some men jumped on the cars to make sure that they were the first ones ready to unload the trunk. I had hoped to accompany Exibel home to make sure that she and the baby were okay, but it was getting dark, and it wasn't safe to cross the bridge into Venezuela so late. Crime and robberies have spiked in recent years in these border areas, and they get worse at night. Hey. When we got out of the car, everything around us was loud. The music, the busy crowd, the angry traffic. Exibel's cousin looked for a wheelchair to rent so that she could make it across the bridge. Exibel struggled to sit because her C-section hurt so much. She looked so lonely, so lost. I hugged her. It's hard to hear with so much noise and loud music around us, but while I hugged her, I told Exibel to take care of herself and that she was very brave and very strong. As I watched her disappear in the busy crowd, I worried about her and how she was going to manage with that scar and a one-day-old baby. I'm 36, and I still don't feel ready to have a child. But I have the ability to choose when to have children, or not to have them at all. Many women in Venezuela, and across the world, don't have that privilege. I also think of the women who accidentally get pregnant and make the difficult decision to have an abortion. Maybe they don't want to drop out of school or abandon the career path they have been working so hard to build. Unfortunately, these are compromises many women still have to make when they have children. Here was Exibel, holding her second baby in her arms at 20 years old, in a foreign country, 24 hours after giving birth and having taken barely any painkillers. And despite all that, she still was optimistic about her future. For days, I worried about Exibel and her baby. What if her C-section wound got infected? What if she didn't have enough milk for Luz Mariel? What if the baby got sick? About a week later, I got a message on WhatsApp. It was a photo of a plump, tanned, and beautiful baby wearing a white cotton bonnet. Luz Mariel was growing up healthy, and Exibel couldn't be prouder. Not long after the border closed due to the pandemic, Exibel went back home, to Venezuela.
The pandemic has made access to contraceptives even more difficult for women around the world. Research from the United Nations shows that 12 million women have been affected by birth control shortages over the last year, leading to 1.4 million unintended pregnancies. In the United States, one in four women report that because of the pandemic, they now worry more than they used to about being able to afford or even obtain contraceptives. This episode was produced by Marta Martinez and edited by Andrea Lopez Cruzado. It was reported with support from the International Women's Media Foundation. Fact-checking for this episode by Carly Rubin. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Julieta Martinelli, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reynaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Maria Esquinca. Our intern is Oscar De León. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, I'll see you on social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. And the Wincote Foundation.
You guys know Oscar De León? He's like preeminent salsero from Venezuela. He's like a father of salsa. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, I talk with Rita Indiana about her new album, her queer, pan-Caribbean identity, and why she left the music scene 10 years ago. That's next time on Latino USA.
From PRX.